From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour is being made in classrooms around the country where K through 12 teachers are either back at work already or gearing up for the return of students next month. Governor Cuomo announced August 7th that schools in New York would be allowed to reopen. And throughout the summer, teachers have shared their perspectives on that decision. In early August, the Rochester Teachers Union president, Adam Urbanski, sent a letter to teachers saying he was opposed to the RCSD's plan at the time, which was a hybrid model. Since then, the district has moved to a fully remote model. Urbanski is not alone. An NPR Ipsos survey of teachers conducted in July found, quote, an overwhelming trepidation about returning to the physical classroom, end quote, among teachers. According to the findings, 82% of K through 12 teachers said they are concerned about returning to in-person teaching this fall, and two-thirds prefer to teach primarily remotely. But some teachers do want to go back. Some say remote learning is a struggle and they want to get school back on track. Others say they want to help colleagues who may not be able to go back in person. Florida fourth grade teacher Chris McCormick told the Tampa Bay Times he wanted to go back to school because, quote, I wanted to leave that remote teaching option for someone who might really need it. I know there are some older teachers or teachers who may not feel safe to return, end quote. He says he would feel safer if everyone started with distance learning, but he believes kids learn better in person, and finding that balance is a challenge. Throughout the last several weeks, we've talked with parents and superintendents about reopening plans, and now it's time to talk to the teachers. We've heard from many teachers throughout the county, and the majority have asked us to keep their names and districts confidential if we decide to share their comments. That's why it's taken us so long to get this show on the schedule. We understand where that hesitation comes from. Some teachers have told us their districts have banned them from talking to the media or from discussing reopening on their social media platforms. But I want to share this on behalf of the entire team here at Connections. This program has always been dedicated to having productive conversations where we address multiple angles of an issue. This is a sensitive and unprecedented time, and there are understandably a lot of emotions. But we're not here to be judgmental. We are not here to point fingers. No solution this fall is ideal. Our goal today, as it is every day, is to try to fully understand each other's choices. So with all that in mind, we welcome four teachers today who are sharing their perspectives on reopening, and we want to thank them for doing that. Joining me on the phone is Olivia, a special education teacher in the Greece Central School District. Olivia, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate being here.
Also on the line is Anne Boffman, a chemistry and physics teacher in a local district. Welcome to you, Anne.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And then we have two teachers from the Rochester City School District. Kristen French is a speech-language pathologist at the elementary school level. Kristen, welcome to you.
Hi, thank you for the invitation to be here.
And Megan Harris is a special education teacher at the high school level in the city school district. Welcome to you, Megan.
Yes, hello, and thanks for having us.
So I'd like to start by asking each of our guests today how they felt when they heard Governor Cuomo's announcement that schools in the state could reopen. Again, that decision was made on August 7th. And Megan, when you heard that announcement, what was your initial reaction?
Well, I think my initial reaction was more about my students and thinking about how well they might be able to learn in a hybrid type of situation, because I believe that we certainly weren't going back in full, you know, classroom mode. And since I am a special education teacher, in thinking about kids who might have some difficulty with scheduling, you know, 2 days on, 3 days off, that was my first and probably biggest concern at the time. I had some conversations with some parents who did also have concern about their students being in, you know, with other students that could possibly be infected. And there was a lot of concern about their kids being in that type of situation. A lot of my students do have some underlying health conditions as well. So I think that was my initial response, was just thinking about their health and safety and well-being.
Mm-hmm. And Kristen, do you agree? How did you feel when you heard the governor's announcement?
Yes, yeah, I do agree with Megan's response, like keeping it student and family centered. There was some sort of excitement right away being able to see our students again, because we're very eager to get back into our classroom. So, yes, my perspective is not far off from Megan's.
Mm-hmm. Olivia, how did you feel when you heard the announcement?
Yeah, I agree with what the others have said so far. I think I had a mix of emotions. I was happy that we were starting out online. I was really nervous about the premise of having to teach my kids how our procedures and things like that from a remote setting. But I'm also very concerned for my students, because I do teach students with disabilities about the routine, the changing schedules, you know, the PPE that we'll have to be required to wear, things like that. So it was just a huge, like, bittersweet moment when I saw that announcement from Governor Cuomo, because there's still so many unknowns. So I was happy to see my students in that sense, but at the same time, also very concerned about, you know, what that will actually look like.
Mm-hmm. And Anne, how about you? When you heard about reopening, what did you feel?
I guess, I don't know. I guess I just felt like, okay, this is getting real. So let's look at what's happening. Where are the details? So that's when I started looking very carefully at the situation of how they were going to do it and whether or not I felt comfortable with it and whether or not my students would be safe and their families. So that's when I really put a lot more energy into looking into the details of what the safety concerns would be.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of those details, Anne sent us a very detailed email a couple of weeks ago with what's going on in her district. And I just want to say for our listeners, the four teachers that we're speaking with today are representing themselves, not their districts, not their individual schools. They are here just sharing their own perspectives and opinions, so not tied to their districts at all. I'd like to ask each of you now what kind of learning situation you are going back to in the fall. As I mentioned in the introduction, we've talked to a handful of superintendents in the county who have made themselves available to share the reopening plans. We're going to continue those conversations. In fact, the next one is next Thursday, the 27th at noon. And as we do that, we're trying to get as many details as we can so our listeners know what's going on throughout the county. So, Olivia, I'll start with you. When you head back to Greece in the fall, what will the classroom look like for you?
So we are doing a hybrid learning model, which means that the kids are split up into different groups, and some kids are there some days of the week, some kids are there other days of the week, but the teachers will be there all 5 days of the week. And no students are in the building on Wednesdays. They've told us that Wednesdays are going to be for professional development and planning. Because I teach self-contained special ed, which means that I teach 12 students all day long. I teach them the four core subjects. My students will actually be in school 4 days a week, so they fall into what's called a group three category. And I was very relieved and excited when I heard that. Because my students have more severe academic disabilities, the idea of having them remote learning more than they were in-person learning was very scary. So when I heard that the district had made the decision to have the self-contained students to be in the building 4 days a week, that was quite the relief. And so as far as we know, that's a lot of what I know. And then students do have the option to opt out in the sense to go completely online if they want to. I do not have a caseload yet. I do not know which of my students will be in person, which will be online yet. And I've been told that the information is coming soon. So it's just kind of a waiting game to see how that will work. And we don't really know exactly what Wednesdays will look like. It's supposed to be an intense cleaning day. But as far as professional development, you know, we're hoping for a lot of just preparation as far as curriculum and instruction and the delivery that the district wants. And just kind of to clean things up since last year we were in kind of an emergency mode. So it's going to look different for sure. But at the same time, like I said, I'm thankful that at least my students will be there 4 days a week.
Did you hesitate at all when you heard the announcement that you would be going back? Were you concerned? Did any part of you consider maybe not going back to the building, either teaching remotely fully if you could, or just putting yourself on hold for a while?
I definitely had concerns for sure, you know, not just with getting sick, but also, you know, with putting my other loved ones and my family at risk. The thought of not going back didn't really cross my mind. I definitely feel like in my position, I have a lot of abilities to go back to school without being super fearful of getting sick. I don't have any underlying health conditions, things like that. And kind of like what you said, and when you opened, you know, leaving that option for people who really might need it, you know, I definitely kind of saw myself in that category. But there's definitely fear and anxiousness for sure. And one of my big questions to my administrators has been, what happens when a student does get sick? What happens when a teacher gets sick? Are we going to shut down the whole school like we did last year? Is it going to be something where just classes go out? You know, that kind of stuff is really where my concerns are. I want to just make sure that I know what to do as soon as a student is ill, or if myself is ill. What is that supposed to look like? And those are answers that we don't really have yet.
Hmm. Do you feel like your district is being transparent and forthcoming with information? How is the communication?
So from my perspective, I've taught in other districts in the past, and I've been really happy with the communication that Greece has been giving us. We get weekly emails from our superintendent, and my principal has also been very forthcoming with the information that he has. So I don't feel like anything's being kept from us. I think that there's just still a lot of things that are being worked out. I think, and my hope is that, the things that we don't know is just because they haven't decided those things yet. I've participated in some curriculum planning and things like that throughout the summer. And, we get little, they might say this, they might say that. But I feel like every time they've made a decision, they've been very forthcoming and very timely in announcing those decisions, both to parents and staff. And for that, I've been very thankful.
And I referenced your email before and all the details that you sent us. I know you have a lot of opinions about going back and the communication that you've received from your district. So what type of situation are you going back to in the fall? And did you hesitate at all about going back?
Okay. So just to be clear, this issue I have isn't with my district. The issue I have is with the New York State and CDC guidelines, and specifically their guidelines concerning the idea of being able to trade off wearing masks for 6-foot distancing. Again, this is an issue at the state level and the federal, which I don't know we're going to do about that. But New York State is saying that that is okay to do. There is no science that supports that. So after I read that, I talked to people from ASHRAE. ASHRAE is the professional organization for HVAC engineers, and they set the standards. And I asked them, what's going on here? And they're like, we do not endorse that concept. You indoors a mask and social distancing, not or. That's from ASHRAE. I was like, geez, okay. So then I recently talked specifically, Dr. Mendoza and the county have been putting recommendations in memos to the superintendent. They talk to superintendents all the time, but they can't do a mandate. That can only happen at the state level. What does the Monroe County and Dr. Mendoza recommend? They recommend masks at all times, even with 6 feet distancing. Okay, so that is important to know. And why is that? Why is this happening? What is this misunderstanding? This misunderstanding, from as far as I can tell, in the state and NYSED documents, seem to be that they are just basing transmission on droplets. But there is nothing in the science to support that, and I can't find one person in the science community who would support that notion. All of the epidemiology points to three major things for spreading events for COVID specifically, not just viruses in general, but in this specific case of COVID-19, overwhelmingly indoors. Out of 1,200 cases, all but one could be traced to something indoors. That one was outdoors where somebody was jogging behind someone else for 10 miles. Two, close contact. That doesn't necessarily mean droplets. You breathe in aerosols at a higher concentration at close contact. So indoors, close contact, and the third one is no mask. You can't conclude from that that is only droplet transmission. In fact, if you look at the physics of particle motion, you would say the opposite. Now, let me just give you an example of how this plays out, because we can't detect COVID in the air in real time. But let's give an example. Using the state guidelines, this is how my day could go as a teacher. And I'm going to replace COVID with something, another aerosol that I can smell and notice, because we have such incredible sensory smells. Let's say instead of, being able to, my
the person's in the room. So the class comes in. They've got their masks on because they were just in the hallway. According to guidelines, they sit at their desk, 10 students, 6 feet apart. They take off their masks. One of the students lights up a cigarette and produces an aerosol. Physically, that aerosol produced from the cigarette is exactly, in terms of the migration throughout the room and the way we breathe it in, there's no difference between that and a viral aerosol. How long does it take before the person 6 feet away notices the aerosol from the cigarette? How long does it take before the whole room notices it? And this person's not just smoking one cigarette. They're sitting there producing this aerosol over hours. Is the ventilation system going to pull that out? The ventilation system's not like a clean room, 3 to 4 air changes. It's going to accumulate. So not only are you spreading this throughout the room and people are breathing it in for the entire day, it accumulates and the concentration goes up. Well, I'm just saying, one thing is like, just to illustrate, what if instead that person who was producing the aerosol had a bubble around them that took away 95% of the aerosol particles, all the particles in general, 95% were removed. What would that, is that something maybe to think about? You know, how would that change the situation? Then the ventilation system might be able to handle that classroom ventilation system and it wouldn't accumulate. Mm-hmm. So this is what I'm saying. People have a very misunderstanding about the transmission of this disease. And if we're clear, Massachusetts and New Jersey have already mandated masks in schools. They've done that. This is not something that's like toy out. And everybody that I've talked to in, like I said, professionals in indoor air quality, physics professors, This is a huge thing for the whole country. And I'm really surprised that the governor cannot make that mandate, considering what had happened and what the city of New York has gone through. It's unconscionable.
Well, let me ask you one more question, Ann, before I turn to Kristen and Megan, about masking. Mask breaks are required under state guidelines. Who do you think should be in charge of deciding when those breaks happen in schools? Teachers, principals, should it be superintendents? Should it be health professionals? Who would you like to see that decision? Who should be making that decision?
We're not even there yet because they haven't mandated them. You can't like talk about mask breaks in a way that's like statewide until the state says you have to have the mask on at all times. Because when you say that, then you say, okay, then we're going to figure out a way to do mask breaks. But you can't even talk about that until they mandate them.
Mm-hmm. Did you
Right now the mask break is whenever they're at their seat, at their desk. Take your mask off at any time. I mean, that's the state. Superintendents throughout New York State have upped that, you know, gone beyond the CDC and New York State standards. But New York State needs this is not going to work unless New York State takes a leadership position. Mm-hmm. It costs $0 to tell people they have to wear masks all the time. And yet they're worried about the money in school closings. It's like, I can give you a cost benefit analysis on that in 2 seconds.
Right. Well, I know your colleagues in the Rochester City School District don't have to be concerned about that issue quite yet because the district is beginning with a fully remote option. And I'll turn to Kristen and Megan about that. How do you feel about the choice that was made by the district? Originally, it was a hybrid model. That's what Dr. Meyer-Small had discussed on this program and in other venues. But then, as I mentioned in the introduction, that decision changed very recently, and now you're looking at a fully remote schedule. It's just to start. And Kristen, how did you feel about that?
Well, initially, I felt a big sense of relief because there's a lot of anxiety going around, just wondering, like, what the final decision was going to be and then really keeping our students and our families and the staff, like, health and safety in mind. And then once that decision was made, it seemed like it was the best decision. It was the most responsible action to take, especially looking at our district. We have a large district. We have about 25,000 students. about 45 buildings. So that is a lot. And also the population of students that we have the opportunity to work with are disproportionately impacted by COVID. So their families are very often ones that are essential workers, and sometimes our students are as well. And just overall, COVID has impacted our Black and Brown and Latinx students compared to white people. So although we know remote is going to be very challenging and it's definitely not ideal, but it's the best option to go right now. For those that don't know, the first 10 weeks, we are going to be fully remote. And so Monday and Tuesday and Thursday and Friday, we'll be seeing our students on virtually for most of the day, depending on what grade level the student is in. And then Wednesday will be an opportunity to have meetings and professional development at your grade level or your department, at the school level. So initially it was relief, but then also stepping back and looking at the full picture, you know, thinking about our students and our families as priorities, and thinking about all the other components of it, is like social emotional care and their mental health, and how are they going to get food, and, you know, really looking at the academic piece and technology. There's so many different components to it.
Mm-hmm. Megan, you're a special education teacher at the high school level in the city school district. Do you have any concerns about students learning remotely and that social emotional component that your colleague just mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So the logistical challenges certainly are going to be difficult. And, you know, just I think that all teachers would agree that we're going to miss that face-to-face, you know, a connection with our students. There's always a real spontaneity to teaching and learning, the back and forth conversation and connection that we'll definitely miss being in person. I know at this point in time, we will be doing social-emotional connections every morning with students. And again, as Kristen alluded to earlier, that depending on grade levels will depend the amount of time. So the social-emotional piece will also depend on the grade level, spending anywhere from 20 to 30 minutes every morning to make that connection. I think when we were all virtual last spring, as one of your other panelists said, I was a self-contained teacher as well. And what I found the most important piece to that is connecting with them as much as possible, connecting with the parents, connecting with the students. You know, you can't put a price on face-to-face and personal connection, but you still can certainly connect with those youth. And I did make myself available as much as humanly possible, even beyond the restraints of the regular school day, to ensure that students had that connection. And I think I mentioned earlier, I've also been connecting with them throughout the summer, just to continue to keep that personal connection. I mean, nothing, again, can stand in the way of being face-to-face with someone, but it is concerning that the population that we have, when you're looking at the risk of infection for being moderate to high, and the fact that many of our families share child care responsibilities, a lot of them have older caretakers such as, you know, great aunts and uncles, grandparents. There's also a lot of concerns about the newer information coming out, talking about how kids from ages 5 to 17 can have the amount of virus in their nasopharynx and can also be carriers. And even if they may not be symptomatic to the eye, you still could carry that to a family and then they take it home. And the highest spread will be between household contacts. So, you know, that's it. I think it was Livy that said something about it being bittersweet. Mm. I certainly agree with that. And I feel very strongly as a special education teacher, as I heard her also remark, that it is really important that we're there for support. I mean, right now, we're just in the beginning of stages of understanding what remote will look like for our CSD, because the announcement just is about a week old. And, you know, we're trying to work on how that will look. I am moving to a consultant teacher integrated co-teaching model, which is me working with another teacher who's a content teacher. So it'll be interesting to see how we're going to partner and plan. And the differentiation piece is the one that I think is going to be the most important. How do I take these lessons and how do I convert them into something that is going to be beneficial? Will that look like lots of enrichment? You know, how do I help the parents of the students teach their children at home or whoever the caregiver is? You know, how do you give students the ability to be self-motivated or to look for help? You know, I think that anyone who's worked with kids with special needs will understand that sometimes self-advocacy can also be an issue. So it's really working on that piece of it as well. The educational piece, obviously, in terms of curriculum is really important, but we also have to keep in mind that we've been disconnected from our kids since March, and we do need to rebuild those relationships with kids that we know, and we really have to spend a lot of time building new relationships and taking into consideration some of the trauma that they might have. And I'm talking aside from, you know, trauma in non-COVID times, but the right. trauma of being separated from family or being separated from friends or, you know, not having that community that they're used to having. And again, I think it's just so new, being full remote. And I'm really hoping that those that are working on this, and when I get the opportunity to connect with my teaching partners, that we're able to really look outside the box. We are not in what you would call quote unquote normal times. Mm-hmm. We really need to look outside of what education has always been. This is like a real opportunity for us to grasp, you know, a future of education and change it so that it does apply to everybody. I mean, I know what I did in my self-contained classroom, and I'm thankful for having spent the many years I did. And my classroom didn't look like other classrooms. I did 7th and 8th grade for almost 2 decades. And I'm hoping that what I did, I can apply to the larger classrooms and even to go beyond. I mean, I would really like to see us reinvent education at this point in time and think about kids with special needs. There are a lot of kids who get lost in the cracks, even mm-hmm. with the non-COVID times, best ideas of differentiation and application and pedagogy. And I just really think this is an opportunity to step away from the traditional way of teaching or the traditional school setting that we've been doing for, I mean, I'm going to say, you know, a few hundred years even. It doesn't look that much different except for, you know, the application of maybe computers.
Or exactly.
Whatever. Yeah.
I think that's such an important point. And we've heard from some people about that very issue. And you use the phrase reinvent education. I think we could do a whole show on that, what that means going forward, because we are learning so much from this time. I'll also say this, on Wednesday at noon, we're having a conversation with faculty members from St. John Fisher College about how to teach remotely. So the pedagogy that they have developed and adapted, they've been working with a number of teachers in the county on that, both on the technology side, but also on the curriculum side. So for anyone, any teachers out there, administrators who relate to what Megan's talking about, you may want to listen in on Wednesday at noon to hear from those experts. But we're getting a lot of feedback. Go ahead. Yep.
Megan, this is Kristen. I want to jump in at a couple points that Megan just made, because our Rochester City School District is unique because of all of the layoffs that we have experienced since December due to funding issues and our budget crisis and everything going on. We've had enormous amount of displacements across the district. We've also had school closings and programs get eliminated. So all of that, we have staff and students that are going to be opening the fall time with in a whole different realm, and then on top of it being remote. And then thinking about the, you know, our students with special education needs and just individualized needs, whether they have an IEP or a 504 or not, that we are really going to need like all hands on deck. So this is not the time to keep laying off people. We're going to need to I'm hearing leadership say that we need to develop community partnerships, and you know that might be true, but also we have resources right inside of our district. We have school security officers that are trained in restorative practices, and we're going to need them. We have paraprofessionals and teaching assistants. They're academic support experts, and they've had experiences in that. And we have food service staff, and they would be able to assist with food distribution mm-hmm. and nutrition and all of that. So we have those resources right here. And we really, this is not a time to be doing layoffs. This is a time that we are really going to need all hands on deck in addition to community partnerships. But really, we have the resources right in our district.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're hearing a lot of feedback from teachers who are listening, and I want to make sure I can get those voices in as well. Our guests, it's clear we have so much to talk about. We may need a second hour down the line. We probably do. So stay on the line, everyone. If you're waiting to have your comment or question read or voiced, please bear with us. We're going to take a short break and then more connections next. I'm Megan Mack. Coming up in our second hour, the authors of a new report analyzing education and economic outcomes in our community say something is profoundly wrong. The data shows that there are large disparities faced by African Americans and Latinos. We discuss the report and the impact of the data and what it will take to create change. That's next hour. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. You're listening to Connections. We're having a conversation with local teachers on their thoughts about reopening schools. And there's a lot to talk about. Listeners, you've been patient. You've been sending your questions and comments. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI. That's 263-9994. You can also email the program at connections@wxxi.org. And you can find me on Twitter at mmacmedia. Our guests today are four local teachers. Olivia is a special education teacher in the Greece Central School District. Ann Boffman is a chemistry and physics teacher in a local district. And we have two teachers from the Rochester City School District, Kristen French, a speech-language pathologist at the elementary school level, and Megan Harris, a special education teacher at the high school level. I'd like to read some comments that we've received from teachers. This is from Roger. He's a music teacher in a rural district, and he says, I love my students. I come into work every day wanting to be the best for them, so in turn, they can be the best world citizens possible. Yes, in-person instruction is the best form of instruction. Yes, every teacher wants to be in front of their students and be able to interact with them, smile at them, laugh with them, and cry with them. No, students, teachers, and districts are not prepared to offer engaging, rigorous, and meaningful remote instruction across the board compared to in-person instruction. How does one teach beginning clarinet via Zoom? Trust me, I've tried. The largest concern that I have heard across the board from educators is, I won't be able to live with myself if I bring it home, if I bring home something that could sicken, maim, or kill my children and loved ones. Everyone in my house is healthy, but we do not know the long-term effects of recovering from the virus. I picture my super athletic and very active son having to deal with lung issues for the remainder of his life, and my heart breaks a little at the prospect. Let me say that the instruction that educators are offering via remote learning and hybrid models is still extraordinary and amazing. I do not wish to belittle anything, to belittle the continued learning happening in our classrooms, wherever they may be. I'm proud of what my colleagues around the world are doing, and I'm proud to count myself among them. Please just know we all care very much, and many of us are scared, but we're going to do our best. And how does that resonate with you?
Sorry, my dog's barking now. Okay, yes, that is... I have to give it to my dog.
It's okay. Your dog has an opinion.
Yeah, people are nervous. People are nervous. And I wish I could say, again, that the state is doing everything they possibly could within their range to help keep everyone safe. And this is what is maddening for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, they're not quite doing everything they can. And I'm confused as to why. Like I said, Massachusetts and New Jersey are doing more. We do have lower rates in the county. And I think if they do everything they have with a hybrid model and the guidelines are good otherwise, and everyone's wearing a mask, I feel like we can make it work. And it does make sense. And I would feel comfortable myself. It's a lot harder. He's so right. When you're not just thinking about yourself, but you're thinking about your own kids,
mm-hmm.
and the kid, you know, when I think about my students' health and the health of their families, suddenly things get even with everything. We felt very 99% sure things were going to be okay. 1% anxiety, you just can't help that.
Mm-hmm. Olivia, you're going back in person in Greece, and you've mentioned you. You don't have any underlying health issues, but will your living situation change at all? Or are you nervous about bringing something home, possibly exposing friends, family, whomever you see regularly outside of work?
For sure. I mean, I think that all teachers are facing this. Anyone going back to work is facing this, but I feel like teachers, because we're in such large groups every day and we're dealing with children who we've seen that, you know, are more likely to be asymptomatic, things like that. There's 100% a lot of fear surrounding that. And I also am thinking, you know, what are the odds that we're going to be that, like Ann said, that this is going to work? You know what I mean? Like, how long will it be until they pull us out again? Or is it going to be just something where, you know, you deal with the fact that people do get sick and things like that? And that's, I think, where my fear is coming from, is what happens, right? What's going to happen when people get sick? What are the protocols in place? Because I do think people are going to get sick. I don't think that, you know, as much as superintendents and principals, I'll say at that level, are doing what they see as best to prevent that, for example, masking and social distancing and things like that. You know, I do think people are going to get sick. And then my concern is, are there procedures in place to deal with that, to prevent a large scale outbreak and things like that? So that's where my fears are for sure. I'm concerned about bringing things home. I'm concerned about bringing things into my church, into the other circles that I, you know, live with other people in. And I think that all of us as humans are feeling that way, right? It's not just something, you know, anyone who has to go into a place and work with other people, I think that that's a fear that we have. But at the same time, some of that is out of our control. And so what can we do with the things that are in control is kind of how I'm trying to go into this with that kind of mindset.
Mm-hmm. Another concern we've heard a lot about is childcare. So teachers who have children of their own and they're balancing schedules, whether it's their hybrid teaching schedules and their children's hybrid learning schedules. And here's a comment from a local teacher who says, as teachers from two different school districts, my husband and I feel like we've been left out of the conversation regarding childcare concerns and health concerns. As a parent of three ages, 9, 7, and 3, our childcare costs are going to push us into debt this year, if we can even find childcare for our school-age children 3 days a week. I did consider an unpaid leave. However, with my husband and I both teachers, we just can't make ends meet on only one income. What are teachers doing about childcare and health needs? And I'll open that up to the panel. I don't know if any of you have children of your own, but if you do, I'm sure this teacher would appreciate hearing your thoughts on the issue.
Yeah, I mean, I can speak about that. I do have a child who is entering eighth grade. We are also not in the same district that I teach. And I feel their pain because the conversation was, can I stay home and afford to put my child in care, or can I go to work? This was when we were hybrid. His district is either hybrid or full remote. We did choose full remote because he has some underlying health issues. So right there, that wasn't even going to be, you know, a thought. It was going to be full remote or who knows what. And we ended up having to try and piecemeal together some kind of support between, you know, my parents and hopefully another family that was having their child home, possibly, you know, a family friend that, you know, is retired. I mean, it's just, it really is a difficult situation. I know that in the city, that's another situation where parents are concerned. Is it the health of your child, or do you go to work and make money so you can put food on the table, pay your rent? I know that there are some situations where, depending on your salary, you can get childcare help. I know some of the area wise MCAs and, you know, other child care facilities were trying to fill some of that gap. So I do feel a teacher's pain who have children who are having these conflicting schedules. And that was something that myself and colleagues and friends who are educators, not just teachers, because, you know, you've got other people that are in this education model besides teachers who also have possibly multi-level children, and trying to figure out, one, do I balance my work at home and try to teach my child, or how do I put them into a daycare setting? So,
mm-hmm. A local teacher is texting me right now suggesting EFMLA. 2/3 paid leave can be intermittent, like 3 days a week. I have to admit, I don't know too much about that, but is that something any of you have thought about or considered? Or have had colleagues discuss?
This is Kristen. Yeah, I know of colleagues that have done that and did it partly in the spring. and may continue to do it in the fall. So basically you get 2/3 of your pay. And in our district, I don't know if it's unique to our district, it's 10 weeks. And I heard the state is 12 weeks, but so you get 2/3 of your pay for the 10 weeks. So in this example, somebody did it for 6 weeks in the spring, so they have 4 weeks left over. So that could be an option. But will the district that you're in provide a substitute for you? So that's another piece of it all. But yeah, I believe that's what they're referring to, is the 2/3 pay for 10 weeks.
Heading over to the phones, first up is Linda in Penfield. Go ahead, Linda.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And this is, I guess, a comment that's directed to the general public on behalf of the teachers. So I work for a local nonprofit, and I am a speech pathologist. Yay, Kristen. And recently I've had a couple of parents who have signed permission for me to work with their children either in their home or at our main office. So let me tell you about my day. So if I go to a child's home, I have to do a quick health screening on the phone and ask questions of the family about COVID exposure, et cetera. I go into the home, I take off my shoes, I put on my gloves, I make sure my hands are sanitized before I put on my gloves. I put on my special mask that has the clear transparency over my mouth, because I am a speech pathologist, and on a hot 90% day, it feels like saran wrap, and I work with the child in the home. I cannot bring any of my own materials into the home or into the main office. After I leave that child's home, I go to my house, fortunately 5 minutes away, and I change my clothes. Then I drive to the main office, and I put on new mask, new gloves, go upstairs, and a family comes in. And so we're talking 2 going 3-year-olds, and I have the most boring room possible, and 2-year-olds play. We have puzzles, and we work, and we have a book, and maybe we have people or animals, and I have my mask, and the parent is 6 feet away in the same room, and we're working right along. And then after the child leaves, I take my alcohol wipes, and I wipe down every piece of toy that child has touched, every puzzle piece, every little animal, every page of a book. I wipe down the tables. I wipe down the chairs where the child was sitting, where the parent was sitting, where I was sitting. I wipe down the light switches. I wipe down the handles. Now, this is kind of a luxury because I am working with one child. Takes me 20 minutes to do this. Imagine, my dear public, if you have a classroom of 10 children and materials in this classroom, or 20, imagine this. And imagine the work that goes into making that classroom safe. Mm-hmm. And that the teachers you're hearing on this program, they're doing that for you. So I hope when your school district's budget comes up again, you vote these teachers a nice big fat raise.
Thank
and
you.
And that's
Linda.
All I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. That's such an important point. We received an email from a teacher on the east side who was talking about that very issue, where how the time it takes to clean a classroom, especially a classroom that is, you know, more full than one student. And he has some concerns about how will he get it done in time? Will the chemicals that are being used have enough time to sit and actually sanitize the surfaces? So is this anything your districts have talked about? Anne and Olivia, I'll start with you since you're going back in person.
Yeah, I think that it's a concern for sure. One of my concerns moving into this is because of the cleaning procedures and things like that, our district has told us that there will be hand washing breaks throughout our day, like that the district will announce or the principal will announce throughout the day on the loudspeaker, you know, things like that. Cleaning, teachers will have to clean everything. Like we just talked about, you know, it takes a while, but we will have to do that within passing time, which is, in my opinion, not enough time to do so. And then when you're talking about shared materials and things like that, I think one of the very popular conversations is that we aren't, you know, supposed to be using shared materials in any way. So then essentially what you're allowing students to do is to sit at a desk 6 feet, maybe apart from their peers, you know, our district is having students wear masks during discussions and things like that. They can take their masks off when they're reading a book or working independently, things like that. But essentially what that means is that students are just going to be sitting at their Chromebooks or computers or devices throughout the entire school day, because we can't be, you know, using manipulatives for math. We can't be playing games together. We can't, share art supplies and things like that. So my concern is really coming from that perspective, especially as a special education teacher, where I do use a lot of manipulatives. I do use a lot of toys and things like that with my kids to help them understand concepts and grasp procedures. And with that taken away, I've really done a lot of research this summer on online tools that I can use instead. But at the same time, it's still just a screen that students are using under my supervision. So the cleaning procedures and things like that essentially, in my opinion, puts us in a box as far as what we're able to do.
Mm-hmm. And what are your thoughts on the issue? Oh, go ahead.
So I do have thoughts on this, and a lot, it's not just me. There's a lot of comments that have been made about this concept of, there's even a term for it, like cleaning theater.
Hygiene theater. Yes, I've heard about that. Yeah.
I used to like pick up my delivered food at the beginning with like tongs, you know, I was like, people have not been so used, you know, using the gloves and the tongs as much, because none of the super spreader events can be traced specifically to what they would call fomite transmission, which means like a surface transmission. It doesn't seem to be the thing that pops up. Not to say we shouldn't do the best we can, washing hands especially, but the effort and money that is being put into that versus, like I said, like actually addressing the main potential source of aerosol transmission, again, it feels like a little crazy. I'm not, again, it's like keep your, as best you can, not to share materials. Being outside, if you can, kids maybe then can share materials. Like I'm going to be doing some physics outside as much as possible. I feel better about that because of the UV potential for surfaces, and we'll come in and wash our hands. I have a UVC thing that cleans my goggles, so I'll put, I'll still use that, you know, but again, like this, the time and energy that's being put into that and sort of, you know, non-hospital setting,
right,
is something that, you know, people have to look at all the things and really understand, like, what is the actual, how's the thing being transmitted based on what we're seeing in the science, and let's focus on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're down to our last.
Well, as we can think.
Absolutely. We're down to our last couple minutes, and I just want to give each of our teachers 30 seconds or so, as much as we can squeeze in, the opportunity to say something to either parents, superintendents, whomever you'd like. What is one thing you want the public to know? And Olivia, I'll have you go first. Just maybe 15, 20 seconds, since we're so short on time.
For sure. I guess what I would want to encourage everyone else in is that we're all doing our best as teachers. We want the best for students. We truly do care, kind of like to what Megan was saying, you know, we're finding success in connections with parents. And so to the parents who are listening out there, I would just plead with you guys to be involved this year as much as you're able. We all have a lot going on. It's a different time for sure. But as much as you can connect with your child's teacher, as much as you can be involved and help your child, that will go such a long way when it comes to your child's success in the classroom.
Thank you. Megan. Go ahead.
I guess quickly, again, just going back to looking outside of the traditional classroom, and then even more importantly for RCSD is the underfunding of our schools and really looking to the state level to give us that money that we need just for regular everyday, you know, budget. But then also we can't do a lot of the things that some of our colleagues on the show are saying, because we don't have the funds to run our district on a good day. Mm-hmm. So let's get the money. We need it from the state. Cuomo needs to tax millionaires, and, you know, let's pull that money from where it needs to come from and help us fund the Big Five and the other districts that need that money.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen.
Well,
my comment kind of goes along with Megan's as far as funding, and that we as a district definitely need it across and also across the state. And with Senator Robert Jackson's bill to increase taxes on the rich, that could be very possibly happen. And also to the point about there are options that we can pay our families to stay home with their children. And it would take some creative thinking, but it's very possible to have that happen. So we need the whole community to advocate for the funding that is actually owed to us.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And Anne?
So I guess I don't have much time, but
15 seconds.
We're in this for the long haul. This isn't going to change, you know, things aren't going to suddenly get better. In terms of COVID, we got to do what's safest. Governor Cuomo needs to mandate mask wearing at all times and get this silly 6-foot crutch business, as if it's a, you know, trade-off, mm-hmm. out of the guidelines. And NYFIT, hello, NYFIT needs to also step up there. Come on, you guys.
Thank you.
Everybody safe.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. My thanks to Olivia and Kristen and Megan for joining me today. Good luck to all of you. Thank you for your work. And stay with us, everybody. There's more Connections next.